All right. No blue humor on this one, boys.
What's blue humor?
You know, nasty jokes. No bad jokes. No offensive material.
Oh, okay, because this is a main feed. We got to be on our best behavior.
This is a Christian. It's actually a Christian show.
It's a Christian show.
You've been duped, Aaron.
Apparently, I mean, just judging by all the feedback I received, DMs, angry people unsubscribing from Patreon. We got a little too blue last week with the humor. So this week it's purely wholesome humor. We are only doing wholesome jokes. For example, why is there a surgeon general and not a veterinarian general? Why is there not a veterinarian general for the doggos and the puppers?
See, that was wholesome humor. No humor, no black humor, no humor about anyone dying.
Killed. Yeah, no, nothing about neo-pronouns, nothing about...
No neo-pronouns.
Utopia, nothing that would indicate that these are the beliefs we 100% believe wholeheartedly, even though they're obviously inside a joke that is intended to be satire and making
over
fun
the
of
top
the people.
Ridiculous. I even own its face.
We do this for you guys. We do this for entertainment.
Yeah, just wholesome jokes. Wholesome jokes this week. So
that said, I've been thinking about the archetype of the crazy white boy more lately.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to put together something. The several documents of the crazy white boy and trace his lineage, even maybe further back than John Brown. But
yeah, you have to go. You have John Brown is definitely in the canon.
One of the ones I'm trying to find a print of this to put on my wall, but I can't find one for less than $20,000. But have you ever seen Gordon Parks' series of From Alabama in the 40s? There's this iconic picture of the little toe-headed white boy like pointing the gun, and he's got two black kids they're playing with in the yard beside him. That's an important document of the crazy white boy. I'd like to track this cat down. He's probably in his 80s now, or 70s.
Oh, wait. He's not pointing the gun.
See how his life shook out.
He's not pointing the gun at the black kids. He's pointing the gun.
No. They're just like, I think it's a toy gun. They're just like sitting there playing in the yard. Well, actually, I don't think the crazy white boy has the gun. I think one of the black kids has the gun. The crazy white boy is just
there co-signing as moral support. Yeah, I was thinking about this too because I saw this tweet that was going around. I wish I could remember the account, but it's one of those big communist accounts. But Marxist accounts, but it was a TikTok man. I don't know where it was, but these three, four white boys. The first one has a ridiculous like bowl cut. It's really funny, but they're these kids and they all have like these play toys. Like the first kid has like a bow and arrow, you know, and the guy behind filming them was talking Chinese, and I don't know what he's saying to them, but the joke is that your innocent white children are going to become like Chinese communists, you know? And it just had me also thinking about, you know, reappropriating, I guess, the crazy white boy as a force of good. Because this is something that you had mentioned a couple weeks ago, Tom. And I feel it, you know.
The archetype slipped a little bit in the aughts with the guy that's, you know, his woman's at the cash register and she's paying all the time and he's got his arms wrapped around her, you know what I mean? So he slipped for a second, but I feel like he's due for a comeback.
This is going to be the election of the crazy white boy because the...
Isn't every election the election of the crazy white boy?
Technically, yes, it is, but...
Yes, and...
It feels like there has been a deluge in a way that it wasn't with 2020, weirdly enough, because 2020 was an exceptional year where history was actually moving, where things were moving forward. For better or worse, they were actually, the gears were in motion.
It didn't feel like things were stagnant.
Yeah, 2024, man, this is 2016, like, reprised, right? Because, like, I mean, I've got this book, White Rural Rage, The Threat to American Democracy. I mean, there's multiple books like that. Like, The Reverend Barber, who, you know, I mean, whatever, say what you want. He's just kind of like a... Saul Alinsky, like, idealist type. He's not like a commie or anything.
He did his more Mondays thing, I remember.
Yeah, he's got a book out called White Poverty. I mean, it's all like, they're all, and I guess it's because like J.D. Vance won in 2022, and because he might be made Trump's VP pick, like, but it's now it's the hillbilly hillbilly elegy election.
Yes. Yeah, I think you know how 2020 was sort of this, or 2020, I guess, is sort of this referendum, you know, on the Trump presidency, you know, and it was a sort of holdover from this discourse about the white working class that all these op-ed writers in the New York Times, The Atlantic were writing about, you know, Trump's base, you know what I mean? The silent majority, I guess, you know, or I guess some sort of evolution of the silent majority. So, I don't know, this just feels like a redo, you know? It feels like, I know it's kind of trite, but it really does feel like that True Detective Season 1, you know?
Yeah.
Matthew McConaughey is kind of flipping that
another Rustin Cole, another crazy white boy.
Another crazy white boy. But it does indeed feel like we are not just circling the drain, but we are returning back to something, you know what I mean? We're repeating this again, you know?
Can I tell you what I'm hearing? I'm hearing the dinner bell ringing, boys. Time to eat. We're fixing to eat good in the next couple several months.
Oh, you mean with the horse race?
Well, you know, just the if the white rural agenda is back on the docket, there will be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it never left the docket. However, like I said, it wasn't as big of a force in the discourse in 2020. Just because of the pandemic and, you know, everything. But it is back full force. And, you know, I want to save my thoughts about white rural rage because I kind of want to do a whole episode about it. But I'll just say this. The Libs, they have truly innovated a new... They've made a new innovation in the discourse on this. They have now fully come around to being like, fuck those people. Like, the entire...
It's not even just like they're... what did Hillary call them? Deplorables anymore?
No, I mean, like, deplorables was generous compared to what these guys, the authors of White Rural Rage, are saying about the dumb yokels in the sticks.
Let me ask you a question. I don't want to give too much away, but do you think they want to put us in camps?
1,000%. Like, and I gotta respect it, honestly. I kind of gotta respect it because it's like, at least they're just saying that now. Like, it's kind of nice to just have them say, like, they are beyond rehabilitation, they're beyond help, they need to be put in like camps where they can be ideologically reconditioned.
They need to be put in re-education.
I respect that. Like, it's fucking, it's better than like the condescending, like, you know, we need to show up in their communities. The Democrats haven't shown up in their communities for a long time, and we need to show up. Because, like, let's be real. The truth is that if the Democrats did show up, it wouldn't make a fucking difference. It wouldn't matter.
No, if anything, they could be worse. It would be worse. It would reflect poorly upon them if they did show up.
So
it would take also, like, many, many decades to repair the damage they've done in just a short period of time. So exactly. It's not even something that could be tenable in the near term at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like how that they're casting the American hillbilly as like an irredeemable animal that needs to be put down, though.
It's kind of...
Finally!
It's kind of cool.
Somebody said it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of cool.
It just reminds me of I don't know, man. I know that this is in a different context, but it reminds me of that Malcolm X quote, "The wolf or the fox," you know, and how the liberals, right? At that time, he was talking about the liberals as being the fox. You know what I mean? That they're sly and slick, whereas the right wing, at least, like my in little inside joke about it is that I would rather you call me a nigga than give me a tax credit because I'm a nigga, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather know where you come from and where you stand than, you know, these piecemeal sort of, but it's interesting that now they're just like they're just full-throatedly like, yeah, we are going to round you guys up and put you in camps and have you put you out of the picture completely.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, they don't say round up, put in, you know, round them up, put them in camps. But the implication is that they are irredeemable. And that's, again, that's like, you know, I gotta hand it to them, because, like, that's at least just saying what you mean. So,
well, isn't it the same sort of logic when they say that you know, the South should be abandoned, you know? And then people will bring up, you know, like, people will often bring up, like, oh, that's the biggest concentration of, like, you know, black people. But I mean, it's the biggest concentration of poor people in the country. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, general. The again, I don't want to get too deep into it, but
yeah,
the book does, like, the classic, like, by rural we mean the South, you know, but it's just like it's like everything is a code word for something else. Like, everything is a dog whistle for libs. Like, the libs at this point have their own vocabulary of, like, dog whistles. They have their own, like, schematic of welfare queens.
Their own,
like,
conspiracies.
Their own conspiracies. Like, they accuse rural people of being, like, they use the exact same language Reagan used about welfare queens, but they use it for white rural people in this
book.
That
is so crazy.
Like, both
dude.
Parties, this is what I've been trying to hammer away at for, like, months now, like, on the Patreon this past week. Both parties have their own fully fleshed out, like, vocabulary, constellation, cosmology of, you know, grievances and who's to blame, and none of it is like they'll make hints at capitalism in this book, but it's the poor reprobate, like, coal smudge white people in the sticks, and they're siphoning off resources from the cities, and they're living off government largesse. They say these things. Like, this is not me making that up.
So,
like,
it's not even... They didn't create the value for all that anyway.
You know? One last thing. I don't want to give too much away, but I just want to say that's so interesting, the economic spin of it, because I would assume that they would run with the cultural, right? I would assume that they would, like, these people are Philistines, right?
Well, they do that,
and
too.
And they need to... They're uncultured, but it's interesting that now they've leaned into... pretty much the welfare queen analogy, as you said, that was Lee Atwater kind of pioneered, you know.
Well, what's funny is they can't even make that argument anymore, because white rural culture is dominant culture right now. It's having that moment. I mean, Beyonce, the biggest black artist in the world, just put out an album called Cowboy Carter, where she's
to capitalize off of Yellowstone. Everyone's Yellowstone. Yeah.
Everyone's Yellowstoning. Yo,
everybody should get that Yellowstone bag. That's
y'all,
true.
Y'all should be proud, yo. You guys should be happy, dude.
I'm not proud. I should say.
It's your time to shine, yo.
Azealia Banks did have it correct. That is the most half-assed, lazy-ass title I've ever heard. Cowboy Car. That's like a Trillbillies episode title.
Literally, when I saw it, I was half-assed. Like, "Yo, is this like a podcast title or some shit? Like, what is this?" And also, too, man, I don't know, man. Like, I don't know. This is probably not what we plan to talk about, but I just would say, I thought, since we're running, I would think it would be interesting if, like, as I said in the chat with you guys, if she had kind of explored the intersection between, like, you know, black people and country music, because I don't know that intersection myself, right? And I know that it's an important part. It's not. I'm gonna even say. Maybe to people like me, right? Black Americans like me, but maybe a lost or forgotten part of black history, black American history, you know? But she's not going to do that shit, you know what I mean? Like, Azealia Banks in her comments, she was like, you know, you could basically, she could be subversive, but that's not Beyonce, you know what I mean? Beyonce's not
that'd be much more interesting if she were, though, you know what I mean? To be that huge and also just kind of... Like, what I don't understand with, like, a lot of artists of that caliber, like the Beyoncés, the Taylor Swifts, the Drakes, to some degree, and all that kind of stuff, it's like, it's just like we were talking about, like, Biden could just have anybody's head he wanted. Like, you are not using your leverage like you should, you know what I mean? Yeah. You could literally just destroy the music industry because you don't need it.
Yeah.
And you could just bring the rising tide with you and lift everybody up, but, like, for some reason, they just, like, kind of balk on that. I don't know.
I just think it's someone sent me this. Man, I wish I could remember who sent me this. If you're the one who sent me this, let me know. But the Houston Astros a few months ago, or it was the Rockets. I can't remember. It was the Houston Rockets. This was what made it very weird. It was the Rockets. They had a Yellowstone night where it's like Wait, what? Because it's like, you know, I mean, a basketball game, an NBA game, like you were encouraged to wear your like cowboy boots and cowboy hat. And it's like,
so is it becoming like a franchise like Star Wars?
Have a
Yellowstone world?
Well, yes, you're right. It's become a franchise like Star Wars. And it's also become an aesthetically, because for the longest time, what was in was the South. And now it's the West, obviously. Yeah. Which is really funny for me because I've only lived in the South or the West my entire life.
But there's no distinction in the minds of other people. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, yeah. People think, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Montana might as well be Kentucky, might as well be Texas, might as well be a place that, you know, a place where, like Terrence said, just these, you know, backwater hicks preside. That's going to be the South monolithically in their minds.
Exactly.
You know what
exactly.
I mean? Doesn't matter
exactly.
if it's Iowa or a place not in the South.
It's sort of the way that I think about the Civil War. The Civil War doesn't really divide just North and South, right? It's like a cultural associations, right? So like even the cult associations that people make between, I guess, I don't know. I just think maybe people think about like the South and the Southwest as this broad swath, you know what I mean?
Right.
Of just all these people that are just sprinkled there either in their you know, in their desert towns or either in the hills, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so if the Houston Rockets, I guess we should have known that Beyonce would have a cowboy album coming out, because if the Houston Rockets are doing, I'm just going to say it, all right? I don't think a lot of, like, white people are going to Houston Rockets games. Like, yes, they are, but, sure. Like, I have to imagine that they're probably not cowboys. And the black people that are going probably aren't cowboys either.
Probably not cowboys either. So who is this for?
So who's this for?
But it's an aesthetic choice, though. You know what I mean? It's just like kind of having a moment in the same way that, like, America is kind of like a Halloween place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like every Halloween. When Ministry said every day is Halloween, like, that, like they're talking about America, basically. Uh-huh. Where, like, you know what I mean? Like, everybody just kind of wears a costume all the time.
De Tocqueville famously said that when he came to America in the 1800s. He was like, oh, America, like a Halloween town.
How do you say it?
Like, screw Halloween. Yo, that's such a good point, man, because, I don't know, I'm just thinking, I'm trying to make parallels, because I'm just thinking of, this is for very different reasons, but I'm just thinking about the 2020, right? The protests, right? The George Floyd protests. And seeing how, like, and I guess blackness has always been commodified in different ways, right? When I say blackness, this nebulous association, right? Racist stereotypes, sure, but some true, you know, cultural narratives, I guess, right? Or legitimate cultural narratives. But I just remember seeing, man, during those weeks, that whole summer of protests, going on Amazon and seeing like categories, right, for like black products, right? Or Uber Eats, like black owned businesses, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And it was just like, and I even remember when, you know, Juneteenth had become a federal holiday, you know? And I remember seeing, like, not even a brand of a specific brand of ice cream. This is like the generic brand, the Great Value fucking Juneteenth ice cream at Walmart, you know what I mean? So it's just like, I remember posting on Twitter, I just could not fucking believe it. It's just like,
what,
dude, like
Juneteenth ice cream?
I took a picture, I went to Walmart, and I was like, bro, like, what? And it tasted like trash, because I went to buy it. I was like, this is good. No, it's horrible.
But yeah, like, it's one of those things where it's like, well, now I have to buy it. I guess just once, just to see what it's about. It's so funny, you know?
I feel like every black person that buys that at the cash register, it's like a military discount, you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. My point is that I'm adding to what you say, Tom. It's like what we do instead of actually dealing with true grievances is that we just like commodify these. You know what I'm saying? We just pay lip service.
Bro, I gotta go buy a military discount for it. So that's the funniest shit ever. It's like the person at the self checkout's like, well, how can we be sure? You know, we got a lot of dolazals out there today. Like, I need you. I know I'm looking at you, but what am I looking at?
You need to do a brown paper bag test just to make sure. I mean, shit, man. Maybe that's what they should do, dog. If you're gonna commodify everybody's like culture and, you know, like cultural identity, maybe you should just give them like
all right, Dax credits discounts the Jake, you know what I mean? Yeah.
When is like the Northeast gonna come back in? Are we gonna have like Boston Brahmins? We're just gonna cycle right back to like Boston Brahmins being like, what, they're gonna have a Boston Brahmins night at the Houston Rockets?
Wait, the Celtics. Not yet. Yeah, even better. Just at a place where it doesn't make sense.
I will not be going there. I'll tell you that much. But like, I'm thinking of, you said Northeast. I'm thinking, didn't that the Northeast have this whole, like, maybe this is different. I'm thinking, like, Friends and Sex and the City and, like, the whole era of the night. Maybe, like, the late 90s to the 2000s when it felt like everything was cosmopolitan, you know what I mean? Like maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like that was when the Northeast maybe had its highlight.
It does get at something that's like, you're right, the 90s was the cosmopolitan decade. Like, it's now, for various reasons, and we could, you know, this is why I want to spend a whole episode trying to get into it, but for various reasons now, like, what is in is the authentic rural backwater, and that is something that these writers of that book get right, which is that like ruralness is perceived to be closer to authenticity, and that like that is as a virtue signal, as a political signifier, that's what you mean when you say rural, and that's what the conservatives harp on it so much. But anyways, yeah, I don't know, like
do they in that book, do they echo Yellowstone in it?
They don't mention it once. I was really surprised.
That's funny. It's like just the sort of document of the time, which is funny that like, for a show that's so clearly meandering at this point and like kind of like just they've painted themselves into a corner, it feels like, with the writing. And there's flashes of that show that are really great. I'm not like just bagging on it out of hand or anything like that.
I don't know. Anyway,
parts of it.
The first season is serviceable. After that, dude,
I gotta watch this show, man. I'm sleeping on the show.
Anyways,
It's like, I don't know. Like for a show that does not know it's where it itself is going, it like casts a long shadow.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Kind of like. No, we're getting off this topic, but maybe similar analogy to Walking Dead. You know.
We had
a really high cultural moment and then just overstayed its welcome.
How do you end a show? How do you end a show like Yellowstone?
Kill the main character.
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you could kill the main character, sure.
I think he's actually leaving it, right? Like, isn't Costner leaving the show?
He is, yeah. He's actually about to release his own, like, movie, right? Like, it's a Western. It's like another modern Western. He's, like, really obsessed with Westerns right now.
Why am I giving Taylor Sheridan this money when I can get it myself?
I could do this myself.
I mean, it's like, I don't know how you end it because, or I don't know how you tie it up in a narratively convenient way when the whole point of the show is that like these people are mythological stand-ins for an eternal identity that is at the core of America. It's like at the end of Sopranos, you can kill off Tony Soprano because what are the first lines of the Sopranos? I think the very first line of the Soprano, first episode, like I always felt like I got in at the very end of something.
Yeah.
And so it's like you can kill him off because yes, he is at the very end of something. But like, and so that was the genius of that show. With Yellowstone, they've made them mythic. Like they're gods, they're demigods. Like they have existed from time immemorial. Like they go back to the founding of America. So they don't have an end because they didn't have a beginning. And that's why they kept stretching the series back farther and farther in time, like 1920s, 1880s. Like.
And still wasn't able to like really form that connective tissue. I mean, like it's entertaining on its face. But from a story perspective, it like what? Okay, what's the point? We see Harrison Ford's character, and he was like one of the OGs or whatever. But like,
yeah, the point the
connective tissue is not as strong as like the mythologies of other shows.
Exactly, because the point is that you're right. Like narratively, it wouldn't work because the point is not showing the point is not showing like the generational conflicts here. Because like the generational conflicts are pretty much wrapped up by the end of season two of Yellowstone. It's like, yeah, they fight within the family and everything, but like the contradictions at the heart of their thing, like a kid who's trying to slum it, one of the kids trying to be a lawyer or whatever. Like by the end of season two, they've all pretty much realized, like, well, we've at least got family. We're Americans and we're white. We got family, brother. And it's like, right, there's no narrative conflict there if you're stretching it back 100 years, because that point is not to show the narrative conflict. It's to show that these are eternal mythical
figures
in America.
It's to reaffirm the mythology, right?
Yeah, you know.
I think that's kind of a failing, right? Or something to kind of beware of when you're, I guess, when you're covering, when you're trying to mythologize something, I guess, because you kind of trap it in amber, you know what I mean? And it's only something that I guess, like, you can kind of observe and present to people in something that's not, I guess, organic and flowing, you know what I mean? Historically speaking, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
I think another reason why that kind of falls a little flat is, like, it's clear Taylor Sheridan really kind of believes in Manifest Destiny.
Oh, 100%.
rather than, like, it's like, at first going into it, I thought, well, this is going to be like a critique of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
of
no,
that, like how we got here and all this kind of stuff. It is abundantly, exceedingly clear that he kind of harbors some of John Dutton's views.
No, I mean, you're right. I think he's like the last American who like believes in the literal original vision of Manifest Destiny. Like if he had his druthers, he would invade Canada and Mexico and just keep pushing them. You know what I mean? Like he really does believe.
So not even like a sort of globalized version of that, right, where we use like trade and commerce, right, to extend our influence. You mean like actually go there and snatch Canada?
The
like
land.
It's like Manifest Destiny when you see those old cartoons and it's this big white guy standing on the border of Mexico with some shit like that with his arms open. He's like, it's for all of us,
dude. You know, but that's the thing, it's like so much of Yellowstone is about land. So much so that, I mean, I pay attention to this stuff, right? Like, because I get deep into the woods on, like, land-holding patterns and municipal bond issuing and just this is really, really wonky stuff. And there is stuff in this show that not even I can keep up with. We're like, Beth Dutton's like, we're going to put a CO5 on the 352 and a CVP on our bond land and all this. And I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about? So much of it is these like complex land schemes.
This is alchemy. This is
sorcery. It really is. I mean, like, that's what land holding is. If you go back to John Locke, it was literally alchemy. It was like you put labor and sweat into the land and therefore it becomes productive and private property is born. It's alchemy.
Jesus, man. Jesus.
Yeah, he says that he has that line, I think it's season two, where he was like, this is the thing that you would, this is the kind of thing they're all looking at onto the ranch. Like, this is the kind of thing that you would buy if you had all the money. You couldn't buy if you had all the money in the world.
Right.
And, and it's like, okay, I see what's going on here. And also Taylor Sheridan kind of reminds me, he's kind of like a Scott Fitzgerald in a lot of ways. It's like, he is a guy from Texas. He is a guy that has proximity to that. But he has kind of positioned himself as like the authentic one in Hollywood amongst a bunch of like pussy liberals that don't really like get it. You know what I mean? No. And he's written some great stuff. We've talked about Sicario. We've talked about Hell or High Water and all this kind of stuff. And I'm not like bagging on him, but he does have a little it's a sort of status anxiety and like a fear that, like, I'm sure if you went back to Texas where he's from, people that knew him before, he was probably just, you know, some artsy fartsy kid or something like that. But now that he's like accomplishing stuff, he's got to be like, you know, I'm the real Texan type beat, you know what I mean?
Right.
I understand that, you know.
It just reminds me of the imposter syndrome that we were talking about with J.D. Vance, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And having to return back from whence you came, you know?
You have to double down, in a way, on your identity because you do have this, like, fear of fraudulence that, like, you have left that area, you've left that culture, and so, like, you have to then double down on it to prove to everyone and yourself that you are... You're authentic.
I'm not a pussy California guy now.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't change.
I didn't change up.
You change.
Well, let's table the Yellowstone white rural rage That's a sentence I'm never going to be able to say, or that title I'm never going to be able to say. White rural rage. It's
right,
it's a fucking train wreck of a phrase.
White rural rage.
We'll table that for a future discussion. And this has actually been very helpful that we took 30 minutes talking about this, because I only had one article keyed up for today. And it's a good one. But I think that you guys will really enjoy this. This one hits on all the Trillbilly notes, on all of our pet hobbies since I got sober, anyways. California sober.
Since
anyways.
I dried out.
Since I dried out, yeah. This is written by friend of the show, Jess McAllen in The Nation. It's called The Dubious Ethics of the, quote, World's Most Ethical Companies. Ethisphere has a proprietary metric for assessing how morally correct companies are. Okay.
Can I just preface this with just a thought? I'm just reminded of Google's company slogan, "Don't be evil," and how
that's
I mean,
real?
I mean, that just says it all. That's real, dog. I mean, I don't know if it's still their slogan, but that was. I mean, you can look at all that shit up right now, actually. But yeah, that's it's just so. It's. I mean, it's ironic, you know.
Oh my god, so stupid. I mean,
yeah. Don't be evil was their former motto. Before I guess they restructured under Alphabet, whatever they are now.
It hits on the themes we kind of hit on last week's episode, Midstopia. Like just that, like. everything is advertises itself as the opposite of what it is, but then kind of like winks and nods to say that, like, we know. We, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
we know that you know that we know, and like, this is the little in joke. You know,
I aren't know you? That you know that I know that you want to fuck me. Hey, Norton, get over here and start fucking.
This is, but it also gets at something that, like I said, is a pet, is a hobby horse, which is ethics. We've been talking about ethics for years now. Ethics, as you will remember, was invented all the way back in ancient Greece by a little man called Aristotle.
Total ethics. Rube.
The first rube. Is that what you said?
Arguably the first smart, dumb guy.
Ethics, and I'm going to completely bastardize this for the philosophy knowers in the audience, but ethics was an innovation in philosophy that took what they purported to be known truths about the world and turned them into self-help books. So ethics as a genre or as a thread in philosophy is basically self-help. That takes normative claims about the human experience that aren't cultural in any way, obviously. They're not influenced by, like, culture and things like that. They are, you know, profoundly objective truths about the nature.
They're inane.
Exactly. They are inane and derived from the forms, in fact.
I should note before going further that, yeah, you're just saying, like, based on what they knew about the world, it's important to note that that wasn't much.
Exactly. They would take poops and be like, where did the poop come from, man? How did I get there? What happened?
And then they'd say stuff like some hydra must have dropped it off in my mouth while I was sleeping or something like that. And this is the society that these white nationalists want to base modern precepts on.
Did they have like a poop stick? Didn't we cover that before? It was like a stick that everybody used to wipe their ass or some shit like that. And I guess you wash it off and you
communal shit stick. Yeah. Communal shit stick.
Oh, dear.
Is it the ethical thing to do? That's the
question. Is that the ethical thing to do? That's the real question here. That's the real
question.
That's
what they were trying to figure out. Is it ethical to share the shit stick? And I guess they determined that it was.
The ancient Greeks, sound smart, actually shit stupid. Hillbillies, sound dumb, actually transcendently brilliant.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
Okay, all right, so I'm just going to start reading here. 18 years ago, in the wake of a series of fraudulent business scandals where major companies used accounting sleights of hand to cook their books, fool regulators, and gouge customers, people were fed up. So the Ethisphere Institute and its world's most ethical companies list was born. It occurred to the Ethisphere team, Erica Salmon-Byrne, Ethisphere's chief strategy officer and executive chair, told me, that there was nobody that was celebrating the companies that were doing things well. Ethisphere, a for-profit institution, started in 2006, which describes itself as a tool to accelerate ethical business, has expanded significantly since its creation. In addition to producing its yearly list of the world's most ethical companies, Ethisphere hosts a podcast called the Ethicast.
Oh, no!
A news...
Also, can I just say that... what did he say? He said that... that why aren't companies that are doing a good job being, like, you know, recognized? That's like, you know, when I take the bus and I get off the bus, I'm like, say the driver, thanks for not killing me. You know what I mean? I mean, I guess it's the, I guess it's when people clap when the plane lands, but that's different. You know what I mean? Especially nowadays with Boeing, you should give them a standing ovation for landing you in one piece.
Yeah, you should. You should kiss the ground that pilot walks on.
Yeah, lighting a cigar and like fucking toasting champagne,
popping a champagne bottle.
Exactly.
Cue up the first few chords of the OJs for the love of money as you're walking off.
I'm just saying, I don't think corporations should be rewarded for doing a good job. I think that's just if anything, that is actually the antithesis of their function. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, basically, this is companies patting themselves on the back. And they've devised a complex, like, you know, Jess writes here, they have a proprietary algorithm or calculation formula that tells them what is moral and what's not. And we'll get into that in a minute.
We're going to make that shit an AI, dog. My God.
Too quick to talk about.
So we have the Ethicast, a newsletter, Ethisphere Insights, and runs the Business Ethics Leadership Alliance, which allows members to access a concierge service where business executives can ponder ethical quandaries. For example, how do I measure and assess third-party risk? So I looked this up, just provided a YouTube link to the concierge service, like instruction manual, basically. And it's like two people talking about, so like, here's what happens, all right? Let's say like you are running a business and you have to make an in-the-moment decision. Like, okay, you run, like, a mining operation in Africa, and, like, fucking your, you know, on-the-ground manager accidentally, like, set up a real-life trolley problem where there's, like, 100 people on one side of the railroad tracks and, like, 100 children on the other side of the railroad tracks, and they're like, well, fuck... Which one? And the train is barreling towards the fork in the railroad track.
So they call 911 ethics.
They call 911.
What should we do? Get the motherfuckers on speed dial.
Your wait time is now 2 hours and 47 minutes, but the trolley's coming now.
They play like elevated music for you.
Yeah. That's the problem.
Just a massive bead of sweat while you're watching the train get closer and closer to the...
Wait, they have you on hold. Don't worry, they have you on hold.
If you'd like a callback, please... You don't want to wait, you'd like a callback. Okay. Everything's going to be fine. They're going to call us back soon.
Yeah, no, it's like 50 children on one side and like 500 adults on the other side. You've got an ethical dilemma you need. So you can call 911 ethics.
He's like, in his mind, he's like, God, how do I... There's something about 10,000 rats. What is... How can I get out of this? Two lines, 10,000 rats, or something like that? Oh, fuck.
This actually does hint at something, which is interesting, which is that there is a human on the other side of, at least for now. I mean, I'm sure they'll put an AI.
For now, give it 6 months.
They'll just put it in ChatGPT. But ostensibly, at least for now, there's a human on the other side of this who, like me, is very well read in ethics. Like, yes. Knows all the ethical ins and outs and, like, knows what... They have the ethics manual for humanity, and they can consult that and give you in real time...
It's a tome. It's a tome. As big as a small child.
but it has a lot of bookmarks in it, so you can easily get to any place that you need to.
So that's the thing. Like, you know, you're in college, you're undergrad. What am I going to do with my philosophy degree? There's nothing I can do with my degree. Wrong. You can go work for the concierge 911 ethics and, you know, give real-time advice to CEOs.
You could do harm reduction.
You could do harm reduction. All right. Okay. Okay. There is also a global ethics summit, which occurs in tandem with the honoree gala. It becomes ever more necessary to have a discussion about ethics, the 2024 summit agenda reads, and how we can
make... I just got to ask a question real quick. I just say, throughout this whole thing so far, it's like, it's a lot of talking about ethics, but not a lot of doing ethics. There's not a lot of doing ethical shit, yo. You know what I mean? It's the classic, like, we just need to talk about this thing and raise awareness about this thing.
Yeah, Aaron, conversations are ethical, okay?
They're ethical. We're having an ethical conversation right now.
Yes. It becomes ever more necessary to have a discussion about ethics and how we can maintain morality in our world.
Maintain morality. I'm just, again, not doing good things, but maintaining morality.
I love these people, man. They should all be at the bottom of the fucking ocean.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, you've got a diamond mind. You have to meet quotas. You have 50 adult villagers who are on the brink of starvation who you can, you know, work hard and get your quota. Or you can go to the next village and kidnap 100 children who you know work harder and need less calorie and caloric input to get you that.
And their
quota.
Smaller hands are more deft. They're smaller
hands. To get between can fit in crevices. More crevices.
Exactly.
Which is the ethical thing to do, technically.
So what's the ethical answer here? Both nonprofits and for-profit companies can apply, with the exception of NGOs, government agencies, and nonprofit colleges and universities. Last week, Ethisphere made its annual announcement of the 136 most ethical companies across the globe, prompting a wave of press releases, kudos from the financial world, and a video from one of the year's winners.
Kudos from the financial world. Sorry.
Yeah, it's that guy that had the Thai coconut farm that was ran by monkeys.
prompting a wave of press releases, kudos from the financial world, and a video from one of this year's winners, defense contractor Booz Allen Hamilton.
What?
That's right. Basically, like, you know, the business that runs the CIA, like... for-profit enterprises. That's Booz Allen Hamilton.
They get the highest marks.
Do what, Tom?
They get the highest marks, is what you're saying?
Yeah, they're the five-time. They're this year's winner of the most ethical company in the world,
and a five-time recipient.
And a five-time recipient.
A five-time recipient.
Five-time honoree. About the process. Sorry.
I mean, listen to this. Five-time honoree. The celebration video says a cartoon drone hovering beside it.
Yo, these people are so, I mean, like, dog, it's like, I mean, I guess it just goes back to like doing the opposite, you know, or like the wink, I guess, right? The wink and the nod, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't know, man. When I see a drone, the association that I make is like, I mean, especially with like this is the company getting the award.
Uh-huh.
Is people being slaughtered by drones, right? It's not like this is a friendly drone. You know what I mean? This is not Clippy.
You're right. Clippy.
This is not Droney. Like, come on, dude. Like, what the fuck, bro?
Yeah, you write your papers and Droney helps you. Do you have a question about how to format this?
To target it for you?
You're right. Booz Allen Hamilton isn't even a company in the way that like U.S. Steel is, right? Or like Ford. It doesn't manufacture anything but violence and just political disruption around
the
world.
Well, maybe the ethical thing is that like they are ethically by making these, they're making these weapons to make the world a better place, you know?
Mm.
That's what they're doing, you know?
Well, here's some...
In the Wattsburg Yellow Jacket 1998 middle school yearbook, there was an ad in the back. So you'd sell ads to local businesses and they'd sponsor the yearbook, you know. Uh-huh. I'll never forget Frank's Gun and Pond, what their tagline was. Frank's Gun and Pond, the friendly gun shop. And I always laugh about that all the time. That's kind of what they're saying that Booz Allen Hamilton is here. It's like we're the friendly defense contractor.
I mean, they might as well. It's like walking into like a gun store, and like the awning is colorful and shit like that. They make it look like a toy store or something like that. You know, it's like frilly and soft inside. You know,
I really love Droney, the Clippy like the Clippy like assistant for when you're doing your charts. You're doing your charts and graphs of how many people you've killed around the world. This year.
How many counter-revolutionary groups you've supported?
Droney, can we get a number crunch on how many heads of state we've assassinated this quarter?
Oh, we love you, Droney.
Listen, other awardees from this year include the pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly, the health insurance company Blue Shield of California, and the Fortune 500 toy manufacturer Hasbro.
Dog.
Blue Hasbro. Shield of California, like the, if there's any company that like buy, I mean, health insurance, like, it, I mean, at least on American soil, is there any company that has more blood on its hands than a health insurance company?
Yeah, those are by definition unethical companies because they're the middleman to people getting health care. Not even a middleman, actually. They're an obstacle to people getting health care.
It's the reason people don't take ambulances when they've got like their fucking arm severed. It's like, yeah. I'll walk it off, bro. I can't afford it anymore.
Nah, bro, please don't call the ambulance, bro. Please don't call it.
Dude, yeah, it's the reason you have to triage like who lives and dies in the world. Like, truly, in some ways, even more insidious than like, you know, Droney and the boys.
You know what I would say too?
Like, you know that's bad. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, like, yeah. We've this is like a scam wrapped in a scam wrapped in a scam. Healthcare, American healthcare is. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. We're all trying to convince each other that like making a 14% improvement in outcomes is like that constitutes morality and not, you know, actually just
getting rid of
people
it.
Care. You know,
exactly.
Yeah. Also too, I think we could look at this awards. The awardees, we could look at this whole process and just say that these are the most evil companies, actually.
You know? Yeah, I mean,
the companies that have been awarded the most ethical are actually the most evil companies based on their judging by their standards.
Well, once
I'm
we get
be
into
honest
the...
with you, if our high water marks are Droney, I have to say, I think that the Thai coconut monkey guy, whoever's behind that outfit, he makes a compelling case to take the roses next year.
Giving monkeys jobs? Okay,
monkey unemployment was hovering around 0% last year until he came along, you know?
I mean, banana poverty, banana deficits.
That's true.
Well, once we get into like the ethics questionnaire, it'll be a little easier. It'll be a little more clear to see how they define what's ethical.
Okay.
Okay, so it's not a new thing, Jess writes, corporations using confusing acronyms and equations to congratulate themselves. There is CSR, corporate social responsibility, and ESG, a criteria for investments focused on environmental, social, and corporate governance, or what conservatives call woke capitalism. But where Ethisphere differs is its focus on a quantifiable and astute-sounding measure whose complexity seems to compel corporations into inherent trust. The press department at Ethisphere told me about its proprietary formula, the highly complex and trademarked ethics quotient methodology. Companies bestowed with the honor of scoring high enough can use the world's most ethical company's logo on their website and enjoy a glossy reputation booster.
Like, this is like a Nintendo like seal of quality.
Like, don't trust it unless it's got the Nintendo sticker.
Yo, these people are so funny. Oh my god, yo.
Some of this year's honorees include 7-time winner Leidos, a weapons manufacturer that creates products for the U.S. Army. 2 years ago.
God.
Dude, it gets even worse. 2 years ago, the company was awarded the Pentagon's Project Mayhem contract to develop an unmanned hypersonic aircraft. On its website, it boasts next-gen strike systems and technology for today's warfighter.
Bro, then they trying to make the plane from stealth? Come on! No! This is literally the shit in science fiction that they're literally giving awards to companies that are like the science fiction villains in every fucking novel, dude. What the fuck?
Then there's 10 time honoree U.S. Bank, which the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau ordered to pay nearly $21 million last year after blocking out-of-work customers from receiving unemployment benefits at the height of the pandemic. We work hard to ensure to do the right thing in everything we do, noted a U.S. Bank representative.
Except what is the right thing to do.
Except what is the right thing to do. The University of Pittsburgh Medical Center was awarded for the sixth time, despite being ordered to pay the federal government $8.5 million last year in a lawsuit over falsely billing federal programs, as well as jeopardizing patient health. But here we go. Here's the kicker. But the company that really takes the cake is six-time honoree Elbit Systems of America, a subsidiary of Israel's major weapons firm, Elbit Systems. The company's Israeli counterpart reportedly supplies around 85% of the IDF's drones and land-based equipment, which as of late have been used to kill residents of Gaza. Elbit doesn't shy away from its involvement in Palestine. The company's website advertises its Iron Sting weapon, which features neutralization of targets within 6.5 miles as the answer to the complex reality following October 7th. It has also been involved in the militarization
of the complex reality.
Complex reality.
You see my face, bro? They gave the award to a literal baby killer. That's insane.
Dude, there's a story in the New Yorker this morning about children that have, there's like hundreds of children in Gaza that are now amputees. There was a story in the New Yorker about them this morning. Absolutely astonishing, abhorrent, just, one of the most grim things you could possibly imagine. I'd be willing to hazard a guess that probably a solid, well, just by its own metric here, 85% of those kids who are now amputees were probably, had that done to them by Elbit Systems supplied resources and materials.
They're going to give away the Charles Manson Lifetime Achievement Award next year.
The John Wayne Gacy.
Actually, that's actually a disservice to Charles Manson.
It really is, actually. Sorry, J. Wayne Gacy. My bad. Yeah. The fuck, dude.
The Zodiac Killer Cryptography Award goes to Elbit.
The Slobodan Milosevic Lifetime Achievement Award. Yeah.
The Jack the Ripper Appreciation Award. Yeah.
Just Jesus. On its website, Elbit advertises its 2023 Ethisphere Ethics Inside certification alongside values like be bold, be open, and do the right thing.
So when they drop them bombs on Palestinians, is a sticker attached to it or some shit like that? Is the seal of quality attached to
it? It says Ethisphere Ethics Inside certification on the
bomb.
That's
the last thing you see, dude. I fucking hate these people, dude.
Two out of three ain't bad, I guess.
When asked how these practices, particularly the creation of weapons that kill thousands of people each month, square with an ethical world, Salmon Byrne told me there have been multiple internal discussions about the contradiction. You use the word ethics and it has such an emotional resonance for so many people, and everybody has a slightly different definition of what ethics is to them personally, she said.
All right, is it ethical or not to kill children? Like that's
let's start there.
Yo,
it is an amazing dodge of a question that like should be pretty straightforward. Like, is it
not a lot of ambiguity in that question? Created what? A generation. You've either wiped out a generation or created a generation of maimed, traumatized, terrorized people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to sit here and pat yourself on your fucking back for how you do business. Like, hey, here's what I hope happens to you. I hope one day you know a comparable horror to, like, remember that show Chernobyl?
Yeah.
That entirely fictional account. I hope that these motherfuckers end up like the radiated sick people in the fucking tents, that their body just eats them from the outside and then their brain agonizing. Is the last thing to go and you die the most agonizing death imaginable because that's
no morphine. You just feel that shit.
And somehow we make that happen without bombing a place because that's just going to fucking kill those other people too.
And give these people fucking money.
Well, and here's the thing.
Also, it's good economics for these cunts.
Exactly. And here's the thing. To me, that would be quite ethical. That would be quite ethical. You could very easily square that with a vision of ethics because, if you've already decided it's ethical to maim thousands of children at this point, I mean, Jesus, man.
There's not a death you could imagine that really is appropriate, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, we could get close. Maybe with the...
The mathematical methodology used for assessing good ethics has skewed toward internal company ethics, Salmon Byrne said, as opposed to, is the product that they put out ultimately something that everybody would personally agree with from their own sense of individual ethics? I wondered what Salmon Byrne's moral compass was telling her. When I had started listing the weapons companies that featured prominently on Ethisphere's list, I forgot the name of one and stammered, I'm forgetting the other one, I said, I think it starts with L. Salmon Byrne interjected, Leidos. This caught me by surprise, as I'd naively assumed that the leaders of Ethisphere might be afraid of admitting that they'd put this kind of company on their list. After all, while Salmon Byrne was happy to be interviewed, journalists are not allowed to attend their celebratory gala in April, held at a hotel in Atlanta, Georgia. Seats range from $850.
Atlanta where? Atlanta, Georgia, you said?
Atlanta, Georgia,
okay.
Brother.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
That's good information,
I know. Birdman hand rub.
Birdman hand rub.
So, okay, here we go. Here we get into the ethics quotient. Salmon Byrne, however, was more than happy to share the secrets behind the ethics quotient. The methodology consists of a survey where applicants respond to some 240 questions in five different sections. The 2024 questionnaire asks, among other things, what percentage of board directors self-identify as female or non-binary? How a company's board oversees its talent human capital strategy? And does your organization have a policy on policies?
Well, yo, what does this have anything to do with not killing people? I don't understand this. What does this have to do with not killing people? This is an SAT for basic human decency, dog. What the fuck is wrong with these people?
Basically, it's ethical as long as it's not straight white men doing it.
Okay, okay.
Is that, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. As you just say, it's the wokeness principle.
I mean, I started filling out the profile for our business for Trubilly's LLC. Let's see, we're
Blue Humor LLC. Change the name now.
Let's see. Please indicate the country where your organization is headquartered. Well, many may not know this, but our organization is actually headquartered in Dubai. So Dubai. We are
previously Micronesia. had to switch over.
Including the country where your organization is headquartered. In approximately how many countries does your organization operate? I don't know. What are the numbers on that? How many countries are we operating in?
I mean, I'll
do a number crunch for you real quick.
Yeah,
just 2 seconds.
Give me a number crunch.
Bro, we
I've been waiting for a day when we could do that.
We got to go outside of just even countries, man. We might have a galactic.
Galactic.
Man. There's radio waves going out there, dog. You might have motherfuckers true. On, I don't know, Europa or some shit. Listen to the Trailblazers, dog.
They're the most deranged like the citizens of European society. They're just completely unhinged and horny. Horny all the time. My bad. No more blue humor. No more
hey! No more rain it blue. In, both of you. Looks like we operate in the United States, Canada, Australia.
Denmark? Boy. Are we in Scandinavia?
United States, Canada, Australia, the United Kingdom, Germany, New Zealand, Denmark.
Germany?
Mexico, Ireland, Sweden, Norway, Das Niederlande, Spain, Japan, France, Austria, Thailand, Ecuador, Switzerland, Brazil, South Korea, Italy, on, Africa, Finland, Czech Republic, Singapore, Senegal, Estonia,
hell yeah.
Senegal.
Russia.
Oh yeah.
India, South Africa, Vietnam, Poland, Costa Rica, Belize.
Okay, some of these are bots. Some of these are like content farm.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Nobody from Belize listen to this shit. Come on, son.
Puerto
Rico, Belgium.
Or I could see Germany. Like, das Tribilis.
Very good. Tribilis, yeah.
Argentina, yeah, Turkey, which is going to be critical when I get the hair transplant. Greece, Lebanon, Indonesia, Portugal.
Okay, I think
whoa. 936 listeners in Israel.
Okay, dude.
Okay.
That's fucking Elbit Systems.
That's Elbit Systems, yo.
Then we got 917 plays in a country with just a blank flag.
Yo, I told you, Galactic.
That must
Europa.
Be the Galactic listeners.
Europa.
And then after that, we got Kenya, Malaysia, Iceland, and Croatia.
Okay. Well, okay. We operate in, we're worldwide.
We're worldwide.
Okay, so we can at least for this one click our operation operates in more than 100 countries. So we can do that one. Please select the total size. Please select the total size of your organization's workforce. Fewer than 1,000 employees. It goes up to over 100,000 employees. We can do fewer than 1,000.
I think at least like we at least make like, you know, like we three people, you know, like intellectually, you know, physically. Yeah.
There's
three people. Yeah.
There's surely there can't be anyone in their database that has three employees but operates in over 100 countries. They're like, is this Santa Claus? Did Santa Claus apply to Essex?
Yeah, you got Santa Claus, 12 reindeer, and just a couple of elves.
Please select your organization's total annual revenue in dollars.
I'd prefer not to say thank you.
This one goes all the way up to greater than $75 billion. We're going to have to obviously click less than $500 million.
Yeah, we're feeling adventurous, brothers. Let's do the $75 billion.
I love, yeah, they're receiving this. They're like, okay, so you make less than $500 million. You have three employees and operate in over 100 countries.
Clearly, you haven't killed enough children. You are not ethical enough.
I know a fucking scheme when I see one. That's got all the classic hallmarks.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, which of the following functions would be part of onboarding or orientation for a new director? Do y'all want a new director? We do IT, information security, risk management, finance.
So wait, is the idea is that if you don't have any of this shit, like that you are unethical because your company is not like a strengthening the bonds between you and the trust between you and the consumer?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the more...
So the more convoluted and complicated you are as a company, the more walls you set up as a company, that people, the more alienated you are from society as a company, is the more ethical you are.
Pretty much. And as long as your CEO hasn't done Me Too stuff, you're good. Okay, so it's okay. Like, I mean, if everyone is non-binary and there's no Me Too things going on...
You got enough black people.
You got enough black people. You're ethical as fuck.
You gotta have one black guy with dreads so he can wear his natural hairstyle in the workplace, which is the most ethical thing that you could do.
Anybody else shows up trying that shit, you politely but firmly inform them that we've met our quota.
I'm mm-hmm. sorry, we already have a bedreaded individual.
we're good on bedreads. Come back with a high top fade or, you know, find someplace else to wear.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man. What ongoing training and other awareness-raising resources does your organization make available to third parties? A lot of this is about third parties.
Yeah, like, so this is, so I guess this questionnaire is for the internal workings. This is not actually, so where are the questions on, I mean, I guess, how do you make a question on ethics? I don't know. None of this seems, how is any of this related?
Well, it's weird because they would supply, I mean, okay, I guess if you're talking about third party, you're probably talking about contracting someone out, which generally I feel like you would do in like a supply chain issue, right? Or like logistics. And so if you're doing that, you're going to want to be employing, contractors that also employ ethical business practices.
Like the guy, the company that employed the guy who made monkeys work for a bit.
Okay. This is the question. Right. This is the question. It's like, okay. So on the questionnaire, like how many of your employees are black? How many of them are non-binary? How many of them are women? Et cetera. Yeah. Is it ethical if, like, how many of your employees are literally not human animals?
Who don't have any consent, any will at all, did not sign on board to do this shit? I mean, technically, I mean, you could say those human beings were coerced into doing this shit, too. So all this shit is unethical.
Mm.
But you don't even share a language with primates, for example. That's kind of wild to, like, you know. Like, there's not even a common tongue between you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not even saying, like, you speak Arabic and I speak English. I mean, like, we don't communicate like they do, and yet... But some guy said, these guys are going to be great at fetching coconuts.
I'm going
to... You don't have to spend money to teach a human how to climb a tree. They already know how to climb trees instinctually.
True. Good point. I'm going to start calling out the beehives and anthills in my neighborhood. I'm going to start going to them and making them do ethics questionnaires.
Yo, there's actually a... There's a company in Atlanta. I used to know a friend that worked for it, where they employ goats to eat down your kudzu, right, and your vines and shit like that, right? But actually, it's because, you know, the goats, like, they think they leave them there like for a couple hours. I don't know, overnight.
They love kudzu.
They love it, man. But I mean, I would think that's ethical. You know, the goats are eating, they're getting fed. You know.
See, we could definitely get... Does your organization publicly report on any of the following impact topics? That's capitalized impact. A capital I impact topics related to the communities where your organization operates.
What does that mean?
It's aging elder issues, animal testing and welfare, donations, charitable giving, economic responsibility, economic inclusion, mental health. I mean, it's a long list. Veterans issues, agricultural sustainability. We report on all that stuff on this program.
We have.
So we're ethical in that way.
Yeah.
Damn.
This is the awareness program.
I don't know if I don't know if we would pass the ethics test, guys.
I think we wouldn't pass their ethics test because we're not a Moloch-like beings who just create doom and destruction upon humanity.
Depends on who you ask. If you look at my DMs sometimes, it's just like, you guys are fucking idiots. You don't know anything. All you do is you make bad jokes that are offensive.
True. True. This is true.
To which I say, your wife loves my jokes. Your loving wife of many years loves the sound of my voice. I just want you to remind you of that.
In case you forgot.
Okay. All right. Let me finish this article. So the survey also covers mental health care for staff and the number of public company boards that directors sit on. A methodology committee then analyzes the survey answers, resulting in what Salmon Byrne calls impenetrably an unverified ethics quotient. Then an Ethisphere review team compares documentation to survey answers and produces the verified ethics quotient, the ranking number used to decide who makes the list each year. As for how many applicants there are, that is a tightly held secret. We are so paranoid about anybody ever knowing who has raised their hand for consideration, Salmon Byrne said, because, right, as you can imagine, okay, if you raise your hand and don't make it, it's really sensitive.
Okay. Like, basically that... But I mean, if you don't make it, you're an unethical company, essentially.
Yeah, that would be wild if you like make Burt's Bees and like you apply for this. Like, I'm sure there's all kinds of fucked up, horrendous, like human atrocities, even in just the making of like lip balm. But like compared to like the karmic debt from like Elbit Systems or Lidos or something, you see those guys getting most ethical company, you gotta be like, what the fuck?
What are y'all doing?
Oh man. You also have to apply. There's like a $3,000 or $4,000 application fee to be considered.
Oh, come on, dog.
Of course there is. No free accolades anymore, are there?
You got to pay to get told that you're an unethical company.
This is so bizarre, though. So the ethics quotient, Salmon Byrne said that the weighted scoring system dedicates 20% of its scoring to quote-unquote impacts. She said, what we mean is the way in which you as an organization are impacting the communities and the world around you.
Oh my God, dude. So they talk about a kill count? Is that what they want? They want a kill count?
I guess, but like, I guess they do want literal kill count. They want to tally up the bodies.
I mean, because when you say impact with a company like Elbit, right? What impact do they have besides literally the impact when they drop bombs? Like, you know what I mean? I mean, what are they...
Like, what do they, like, have lemonade stands in communities and shit like that? What do they have, like, book fairs? Do they have, like, breakfast programs and shit? Like, what are you talking about? What does impact in communities mean? I mean, I know it means nothing at all, but it frustrates me, man.
I love impact. I love the word impact. It's one of the most, I would say that impact was probably the most powerful word in the decade between 2012 and 2022. Mm. Like, everything was an impact.
This is going to have an impact.
Yeah. I don't know. So anyways, that pretty much gets, I mean, she basically, Salmon Byrne just basically talks a little bit more about like being LGBTQI friendly, having good work culture, you know, that kind of stuff. I don't really know. There is a question on the questionnaire about how much of their workforce is unionized. And it's like, I don't know what that means. Like, does that actually get you points docked?
Is that a demerit? Or like, do you get points taken off or points added on for that?
Exactly.
Yeah. Hard to say.
My hunch is probably that's a demerit.
Probably. I would have to guess.
That you've created a discord in your company by allowing these filthy workers to unionize docked points.
Next thing you know, the monkeys will unionize.
Exactly. Slippery slope.
Hey, yeah, I've seen the Planet of the Apes movies. I see where this goes to.
Yeah, it's scary.
That was actually a cautionary tale about monkey solidarity.
It really was, but
it's rare. In the coconut fields.
Oh man! All right. Well, that about sums it up. Oh yeah. So that was, like I said, that was written in The Nation by Justin McAllen.
Can I just put a fine point on that too? I don't know. I think that kind of sums up right this sort of internal review, right? That these companies are concerned with and how they appear to be, you know. And I think it just puts a fine point on sort of the theme of the past few months when we've been sort of just the barbarism we've been seeing every day and being told like what's just not true, you know. And again, man, Google's don't be evil. It just feels like we're living at a time where, again, Terrence, you say the contradictions, they're not really contradictions, they're more like these known truths, you know. It seems more like that now we pulled the wool off of our eyes, you know, and they're like, no, it's still, trust me, everything is still fine, everything is still good, look, these are ethical companies. And of course they're the most unethical companies in the world, you know?
Yeah, I think they gotta keep
the scam running, you know.
You know, one of the, like, we've talked about this a lot, but the hallmark of, like, the Fordist system, the Fordist regime of accumulation that sort of, like, held between the end of World War II and the mid-60s, early 70s, was the compact between labor and capital. And, like, once that unraveled, like, it becomes pretty clear, like, why they're now so interested in, like, ethics and ethical business practices and the rise of, like, HR departments and stuff. It's, like, it's an easier way to, like, solidify that compact between labor and capital without having to go the route of unionization and collective bargaining. And so, I mean, I think ethics are deranged as a mode of philosophical inquiry. It is probably a dead end in almost every instance. Unless it's like Mao. I feel like Mao probably got into some ethics stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, like ethics that's not like not bourgeois and not also like... you know, made to justify owning slaves and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I think this woman in the article said it best, right? Didn't she say something like, you know, ethics means something different to everyone, you know?
Yeah,
like, no, that sounds like the antithesis of what ethics should be, right?
Right,
like,
right.
When I think of ethics, I think of a foundation, right? Like truth, right? The
right.
Essence of something, you know what I mean? This company can decide that, okay, it's good to like build bombs that kill children, but it's okay that it's a woman that's in charge of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that it's ethical. Like, I mean, that's just liberal bourgeois sort of like a morality, you know, moralism,
stuff, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, as the world becomes more and more of a slaughterhouse, like at the border or in Gaza or whatever, like it is... it becomes even more absurd and macabre that they would slap like ethics approved stickers right on bombs and shit. It's just like, yeah. I mean, this is, I mean, it's beyond, I mean, it literally sounds like a parody that they would have wrote in like the 90s for like fucking Mad TV or something, right? You know what I mean? Like, just something that's.
Well, I mean, I don't know, man. Now the, I don't know, it's like, now the absurd is commodifiable, you know what I mean? Now the absurd is in vogue, you know?
That's right. Well, I have to think, and you know, we close out, but I just want to say that, like, I have to think that these people really do believe this, because I watched these YouTube videos where they're talking about this. They are the most brain dead, like, automaton people imaginable. Like, they see no contradiction in this. Like, they really have, like, drank the Kool-Aid. I mean, because here's the thing. The CEOs and the people that actually run these companies, they're under no illusion about this whole ethics thing.
Yeah, of course.
But there is a whole class of, like, managers, professionals, or whatever, that, like, really do buy up this, like, just drink this fucking slop up. And I saw it all the time in, like, the nonprofit world. But, like, you know that, like, these people do, they go to college to learn this stuff. They go to college to become, like, diligent, like, order-following psychopaths, and they really do believe this, like, oh, if we follow the rules and fill out this questionnaire and we'll do this, like, really complex mathematical equation, we'll get, like, you know, we'll ring the bell and we'll be fucking ethical. Mm-hmm. Fucking deranged, man.
Well, I mean, you know, it's all about appearance, man, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of the essence of things, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, man, there's a philosophical quandary for you. Essence versus appearance, bro.
There you go, bro.
All right. Well,
in a similar note, I came up with a rap group we're going to start. It's called Naughty by Nurture.
Naughty by Nurture. I like
that. Yeah.
Anyway, let's close out.
That's where I get my blue humor from. Thanks, Mom.
So, speaking of being naughty by Nurture, which actually is apparently a clothing company on Etsy. You've been beaten to the punch, Tom.
Ah, damn it. Day late and a dollar short.
And speaking of substance versus essence, or essence versus appearance, there is an essence here. It's on patreon.com. It's our premium content. We release an episode every week that is a premium episode. And we would like you to please go sign up for the Patreon, and so that you can receive that premium episode. It is patreon.com/trillbillyworkersparty. The link is in the show notes. Please go follow it and subscribe. We would like your patronage, if you would be so kind. All right. Well, so we will see you over there at the Patreon this weekend. And until then, we will see you later.
Yeah. Bye.
Peace out.